Welcome back to Big Facts No Cap, the number one podcast where we do behind the music, even if the rhymes are stupid. I am the guest this week, Phil Carter, and with me, and with you as always, is Adrian Perez. Let's get a big fact and let's get to no cap. And wait, Paul's not here. What happened?
Big facts.
No.
Cap.
Big
facts.
No.
Cap.
No cap.
Big facts.
No.
Cap. Cap.
No cap.
Big facts.
No.
Cap.
Big
facts.
No.
Cap.
No cap.
Big
facts. No.
Cap.
No cap.
So we're doing something a little bit different. No advice columns this time. We got no advice. If we ain't got Big Paul in here, I don't think we can really give good advice. So we're doing something a little bit different.
Ooh, no advice with the open mics.
Hey, come on now. All right, I'm glad you're in rhyming mode now, because we're going to need that for today. So what we've got today is my pleasure to introduce our main interviewee. This isn't Hot Ones, you know, this isn't Jimmy Fallon late night, but we are doing a little interview of one Mr. Phil Carter. Would you like to introduce yourself to the audience?
Yeah, first time guest, long time listener. I think my brother Drew has been on this podcast a few times.
Mm-hmm.
I think my good friend Louis Armstrong has been on the podcast a few times.
Yeah. Beloved guest.
I've heard some great things from both those people about this podcast. And I just, you know, I got a lot of calls to do Hot 97, Funk Flex, The Today Show.
Tonight Show.
The Tonight Show, The Afternoon Show, The Morning Show. But I was like, if I'm going to roll out any project, for one, I don't want to roll it out at all. But if mm-hmm. I do and I promote it at all, I just want to go to, you know, a little up and coming podcast, you know, and, you know, look out for the little people. So you're welcome, for one. And I'm very excited and happy to be here.
All right. Coming into the only stage that matters. Phil,
tonight.
let's go ahead and get this set up. So you have a project coming out. Why don't you just go ahead and give out the basics about this?
Yeah, for sure. So I've been doing stand-up comedy and making rap music on and off, heavily on and off for both of those for the past like 10 years. And I decided that since I don't have any solo projects out, even though I have a project with you out as the open mics, we have a mixtape out, and then I have a mixtape and an album out with Patrick Fowler as the Buster Cups, and both of those projects involve rapping. I have nothing.
Well, I'm also part of the Buster Cups honorarily, but
oh, that's right. I'm sorry, but you know what? I fucked that up. My bad. So I have one project with you, and then I have a project with you and Patrick, and I was like, you know, I want something solo out there. I just want to see what I can make solo, mm-hmm. And I didn't want to do it all comedy. I didn't want to do it all rap, so I was like, I'm going to mix the two. So I have, it's kind of like a comedy rap album mixed with serious rap, mixed with just stand-up comedy. So it should be called a mixtape for that reason, but it's called...
Black and white music, and that's a mixtape.
Hey, that's pretty good. I'm gonna write that down. Black
I think
and white.
Childish Gambino wrote that down a while ago.
Is there any word between black and white? No, and then that's a mixtape that you would like to say.
No. That's my job in this interview, not your job. All right. So yeah. So it's no Lonely Island. It's definitely who would you compare it most to? Who would you? Because conceptually, it is very much a stand up album. It's your comedian's favorite comedian, your rapper's favorite rapper. But who would you maybe most liken mm-hmm. this to if someone wanted an in on what the album is? Or is it a mixtape or an album?
So it is technically an album. And the reason it's an album is because I want to put it on streaming platforms. If I could put a mixtape, if I could put something on Spotify and Apple Music and like have it labeled as a mixtape, I would do that. But I don't think you can. So
when are they getting Datpiff back together?
Oh, that's right. Maybe I could like revamp Datpiff just to put this one project out and be like, y'all can take it back down now.
No. I mean, but, my personal opinion is that you paid too much money for this album for it to not be an album.
I am in a little bit of credit card debt for this album. Yeah, not that I'm going to make any money off it on Spotify or anything, but it's like at this point, yeah, this should be called an album. Like this isn't a trailer. This is a movie.
It's going to be a movie.
It's going to be a movie. But yeah, if I really don't know who to relate like this type of album to, because I mean, definitely Lonely Island is a huge influence, not only on me, but like on me, you and Patrick when it comes to making comedy music, you know, and like drawing out concepts for a comedic rap song. But there's only one real comedic rap song on there. And we can get more to that as we go down the track list. But it just really is a mix between stand-up comedy and rap that I personally believe, not to toot my own horn, nobody has ever done something like this before. So I try to make it as unique as possible. I don't know who else to relate it to.
Okay. Yeah, yeah. One of one. So I'll say we should start from the beginning, right? I think I was reading Linda Tuai Smith's book in undergrad about the power of naming. So let's talk about, that was in the context of indigenous rights in New Zealand. But I think in the same vein of your work, the power of a name. So what are you going by officially as a rapper, and what is the name of the album, and what does it mean?
Yeah, and that's interesting you brought that book. It was a book?
Yeah. Decolonizing Methodologies, yeah.
Decolonizing Methodologies, and that's like the book that I read while I was writing this album. So that's that very funny questions. That you mentioned.
Okay,
interesting. Yeah, so that was the book. That was the question. All right, next question. No, I'm just going by just my government, you know? Well, not Philip Carter, but I'm just going by Phil Carter because I don't know if I'm going to release just a straight-up comedy album after this, or maybe another just full rap album after this, and I kind of want it all to be under the same, like, you know, library if somebody were to look at my stuff on streaming services. So I was like, you know what? I'll go by Phil Carter. But I did want to go by Big Phil for a while just because when working at Tokyo Grill, Brett, who worked there before us, who's an older brother of Coleman, friend of the pod, he always called me Big Phil, and his friends always did. And I didn't come up with any name. They just called me that, and they were all much taller than me, and I always found it really funny. And I was like, this is a cool name. I like Big Phil. This is like...
Well, then you also thought about Uncle Phil, but...
Yeah, I always thought about Uncle Phil. That's true.
And there's also a hot second where... what was it? It was Phil Franco.
Phil Franco,
thought
yeah.
Thought about going by Phil Franco. I don't know if that one works anymore. For
multiple
reasons. Yeah, because
in that Philip DeFranco, multiple reasons.
That was the
biggest
issue at the time, was that Philip DeFranco was bigger. I actually think you can get away with it now. I don't think he's really got that much pool.
Yeah, I don't think so either. Yeah, I think.
But you know, James Franco is now canceled.
And also, I'm bald now, so I do not look like James Franco whatsoever.
You don't often get comparisons to James Franco anymore, I will say that.
Not anymore. And you know what? That's a good thing. Once he got canceled, I lost my hair, and I'm like, thank God.
That was one of my favorite things in undergrad, is that we would be out, someone would say, hey, do you know you look like James Franco? And I would make sure to go first and be like, oh, thank you.
That's funny. And then they looked at me and they were like, you look like Manny from Modern Family. what was your other question? The name that I'm going by, Phil
Carter?
No,
the album, yeah. What's the name of the
album? Oh, the album name. The album is called Tight Five. So it's kind of like a play on words because in comedy, Tight Five is a phrase people use for pretty much your best 5 minutes of material, I would say. Or really just like, yeah, your personal best of 5 minutes material that can work almost in any room. It's like very reliable. It's probably like, oh, if you were to do a set on TV tomorrow for the late night, you want to do your tight five. You know what I mean? You don't want to do like, oh, three of my favorite jokes, then I'm going to do some jokes for me. You know what I mean? So I was like, yeah, tight five. I want to put this off as if it like it's five tracks, which it is more than that because there's bonus tracks. But like the first five tracks, I'm like, all right, this is technically the album. It's five tracks and they're tight. You know, they're cool.
Yeah.
And then
I didn't get that stat. Runtime is like a cool, what, like 20 minutes, 25 minutes?
23 or 25 minutes. I forgot.
Gotcha. Okay.
Yeah. So, the five just refers to the five first tracks before the bonus tracks. And then, the tight is just like, oh, this is cool, you know, like just a little play on words. And then it's mixed in with comedy, which we'll get into in a second. But yeah.
Yeah. So let's talk about the album cover, which you might not have released yet by the time this comes out, but it's a picture of you, a bit narcissistic. Mm-hmm. And I wanted to ask, did you include a picture of yourself on the cover because otherwise you were worried about being in a Bobby Caldwell situation for your career?
What happened with Bobby Caldwell?
He was an R&B and soul singer who everyone assumed was black until they found out he was white.
Oh, wow. Well, yeah, I did that negative picture effect on it, so that's why I look white on it.
Oh,
your
okay.
fans
yeah,
still
yeah,
don't
yeah,
know
yeah.
if I'm black or white. This is not a video podcast. But no, yeah, I just put a picture of myself. I don't know. I thought of some other things, but I was like, I want to look as like cocky as possible because the CD, I don't know if I showed you what the actual physical CD looks like.
No.
But it's a picture of me as a kid. Right after I fell off my bike and the bike is like all crashed and then I'm just like on the pavement and I'm like a little kid. I'm like, okay, this will be kind of humbling, you know, like the cover is like some super cocky guy and then you open the CD and it's like the little kid just failed at his bike. But yeah, I don't know.
Gotcha. Okay. So kind of an inspiration from Old West doing a little crash photo. Okay.
Oh yeah. Yeah. What? Shout out Wes. Yeah. He is the cover of his album is his crashed car, him holding the grill. I didn't think about that. I would just thought it'd be funny to post a picture of me as a kid doing something funny, but
yeah,
that's cool. Yeah.
Yeah, I'm excited to see that. All right, so we got a track list here. We've got so Type 5, an album by Philip Carter. Opening tracks, we got opener, then goes into I Should Have Opened With This. You Know What I Mean. That Was an Old One, and then I'll leave y'all with this, and then we can talk about the bonus tracks later. But let's just go into, so opener, obviously that seems to make sense. That's just your opening song. I've got a few questions about that one. So let's start off. We're going to break down some of the lyrics. Maybe I'll zoom out every now and then just to get a couple of ideas from you. Let's see. You talked a little bit about not having any solo work. So is that the main driver for this album? Otherwise, why this album? Why now? Why is this the time for this to come out?
Because I feel like I'm slowly losing my passion for stand-up comedy, or at least just normal stand-up comedy. Like I like the alternative stuff a lot, but unfortunately I don't live in the town for that, you know? Some stuff I can get away with doing and it's fun and we can get really cool crowds, but most of the time it's like, I don't know. I feel like we live in I live in a place where it's like we just want to see like traditional stand-up comedy, which is nothing wrong with that. I don't know. I'm just not that good at that. I like the weird character stuff and like the alternative stuff. So I don't know. When I was falling off of that, just like, hey, I'm not really enjoying doing this anymore. I was like, I'm gonna work on some like rap music and maybe like, because I feel like comedy rap music works just as well in any city, whether that be bad or good. You know what I mean? I don't think it matters what city you live in. Like,
from so,
like,
Tokyo if you, to Rio de Janeiro.
Exactly. Two places that are on the tour. But like, for example, like if I lived in Portland doing like a lot of weird stuff and stand-up comedy, I would probably just stick with just stand-up. I probably wouldn't do that much comedy rap. But the fact that I live like in the South and it's like a lot of people down here just like traditional or like crowd work stand-up comedy, like what's hot right now, and me knowing that I'm not good at that, like that's not my strong suit at all, it's kind of like, yeah, just falling off from that a little bit. And I'm like, well, I guess I'll just put out a project myself. Just something weird out, you know, and then just put it on the internet. And like people like it, they like it. If not, it's no biggie. I'll just keep on doing me.
Gotcha. So we talked a little bit before about, we've mentioned in previous episodes about starting stand-up together. Do you have any like quick words about what got you into rapping, what got you into hip-hop, what's how long you've been rapping? Do you have like a start date that you think of?
You know, I always think about like us in freshman year of college, because we did our first open mic together, and I do not remember for the life of me if I did that open mic, like that stand-up open mic first, or if I did one of those rap battles first. I know for sure.
I think we did stand-up first.
Yeah.
I think so.
I wouldn't. Yeah.
It was pretty early into our freshman year.
That's true. It was. That was like fall fresh. Yeah. It was definitely first semester. So, and then I guess sometime later that year, I started doing the rap battling stuff.
Are you talking about the one with C Money the Flame? Was that your first rap battle? No, the first one was against
the Triangle match. Yeah. That was a weird one. I forgot who I was like set up with. It was Showtime and Don J.
Yeah.
So that was later that year, and then, yeah, I don't know what really got me wanting to do it, though. I think, like, it was one of us that wanted to really try stand-up comedy, and then, like, the other one was like, hey, if I do it, will you do it? And be like, yeah, fuck it. Like, I don't know. I really don't know if it was me or you, but it was something that I didn't think about at least that much until at least you, like, kind of showed me a lot of like modern stand-up comedy, you know what I mean? And then me thinking like, oh, I want to take a swing at this, you know? I feel like it sucks because I have the same exact thought as a lot of other new comedians do, where it's like, oh, my friends think I'm funny, I should try you know?
Classic.
And I learned fast that is not the same thing, but and it took me a while.
You did that thing where you went up and you said that your friends always say that you're funny, now here's a story about the drunkest I've ever been.
Oh yeah.
That
oh,
was
yeah.
your first
I did a
time,
lot.
Right?
100%, yeah. And you know what? That night, I was probably pretty drunk, too. But, I was pretty dog shit starting up. And now I'm, like, not too dog shit now. I think I'm I think I'm just shit now. But, yeah. So, I don't know. I guess it was comedy first. But I just wanted to take a swing at it, I guess. I felt like I could do it. And then with the rap stuff, I like rap music so much. It was the same thing. I was just like, let me take a swing. Let me just try. And then we made that project together sophomore year. And then from there, it was like, all right, I guess I'm in pretty deep now, you know?
Yeah, I don't know. I always thought that it was an earlier thing because, I mean, I do remember in high school the famous line, I need a dictionary because my addiction is scary. I mean, I remember you having bars.
Oh, my God.
You had bars back in the day.
I forgot about that. Yeah, we would, like, joke freestyle at, like, on the lunch tables. I need a dictionary because my addiction is scary. I think that was the same week I learned what the word diction meant, and I'm like, I gotta do a bar about this.
Yeah, let's Marco read my dictionary.
Yeah. I just came with like a new word every week. Hey, yo, they say it's egregious. Then I just look around for a second.
Making sure you're using it right.
Yeah. I start off a bar, but then I look around for a second just to make sure. But yeah, I don't know. It's really just seeing stuff that I like so much and me thinking like, I don't know how to describe watching something and being like, I want to try to do this. But yeah, it's just something there to where it's like, if you see the only prerequisite is like creative writing and it's like, oh, I could do that, then it's like, I want to try this like art form. You know what I mean? When other things such as like singing, for example, like I think singing is, I don't know shit about singing, but I want to say it probably takes like half talent and then half like skill, right? Like yeah. Maybe 50-50. Yeah, I could be wrong. Sound off in the comments if I'm completely wrong, but I just feel like I hate my voice, and I was like, I know I can't sing, but that does sound really fun to do, just to write a song and then sing it. But I was like, I could rap, I could flow, I just can't sing. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
But who knows? Maybe people listening to this would be like, nah, you can't do shit. You can't do either.
No. I think if anything, people have to give it to you that you are a very competent rapper. You are. That's the other thing I was thinking about when I was asking about how long you've been doing it, is you have like a level of skill that's clearly come from practice. I don't know. I think that comes off very obviously. So let's go through opener. Let's start with my first question. In the stand-up clip that you play to open the track, and there are a lot of clipped in moments from your actual stand-up from your sets, which is I think a really cool choice. I think kind of sets the theme, but also kind of sets the album apart. I did notice that when Christian brings you up, you call Christian your best friend. Do you think there's anyone who would hear that and be upset by it?
Let me just think for a second.
My second question is, how dare you?
You know what? I do need to stop calling people my best friend, because I call you, I call Christian, and I call Zlata my best friend. And now this is the first time I called out on it. I'm going to be honest. Y'all are all tied for number one right now.
There's levels to it.
Oh, man. Nah. I would put you on number one. You know I would.
Thank you.
But Zlata and Christian, I can't put one over the other. I mean, like, okay, so like all three of y'all I get along with, and I riff the same way with like all of y'all, maybe in a little different way, but I feel as comfortable riffing with all of y'all the same. I have known you the longest, so that does push you up to number one. We've been through more stuff. We've seen some shit together, you know?
We were in the trenches together, brother.
We were in the trenches together. But Christian and Zlata, I think I started talking with them like around the same time too, and they're great, other very talented stand-up comedians. I'm sorry about that. I'm sorry that I called him my best friend.
No, it's okay. You just did it on stage in front of the world.
Well, no, he's my best friend. You're my greatest friend, though.
Oh, okay.
wait, you're my most egregious friend. Still don't know what the word means.
All right, let's see. We got a couple more lyrics. You mentioned being interested in a deal with Crackle. Or Sling TV. Is that because you wanted to be on the same streaming service as your hero Jerry Seinfeld?
100%, yeah. Because he's on both, and I'm like, I need Crackle and Sling TV. I need to be with Jerry.
No, you do mention Everybody Loves Raymond gets a few mentions throughout the album. Obviously your favorite show. Not the easiest multi, so you kind of do kind of shoehorn it in when you can, but always a good time when you get an Everybody Loves Raymond reference.
What did I rhyme on the first track? Loves Raymond and Complaining?
Let's see what else we got here. So at one point, you call yourself the J. Cole of comedy. Is that because of your nocturnal emissions or because you love getting in embarrassing fights with black women?
It's because if I start a beef with somebody, I'm immediately going to back out and be like, listen, I can't do this. I do want to give some background on this track before we get into gotcha journalism questions.
What?
This first track is the only track on here that is like completely satirical. I try to write it from like a very, very like overconfident open micer comedian standpoint. But I play myself in it. I guess a very fictionalized version of myself. So yeah, one of the bars where I'm like, I'm on stage looking at my phone and the host is complaining.
Right.
I'm not looking at my notes. I'm watching Everybody Loves Raymond. So it's just like, how cocky can a comedian be where like they're on stage, not respecting the crowd or the host, and they're just watching TV up there. Like,
yeah. So that's kind of an interesting thing. Throughout the album, it can read one of two different ways. It's very much in the weeds of the local Columbia comedy scene. Would you call this album a love letter to the comedy scene in Columbia or a diss track to the comedy scene in Columbia?
That's a great question. You know, I feel like I had to have a lot of love for for the comedy scene to write this album. But at the same time, I think this album is kind of saying like, hey, can y'all just leave me alone, man? I just need to make some weird stuff. I just want to make some weird stuff. I don't want to hang with y'all. I don't want to bang with y'all. I don't want to slang with y'all. You know, I just want to chill. I don't know. What do you mean it's in the weeds of the comedy scene, though?
Like you talking about, you know, people getting on each other for looking at their notes on stage. Lots of, all of the running the light stuff is just one big, you know, F you to people who run the light. There's a lot of little things about where you're kind of, it's very clear to me that the specific references that you're making, that you have at least one or two stories attached to each of them. There are real stories that you are like, okay, yes, I remember when this happened, I'm going to bring it up. And it's also a thing that people know about when you go to open mics or stuff like that.
Yeah. You know, okay, that's a good point. I think that if you're a comedian and you listen to the first track and then you listen to all the bonus tracks, they're going to hit harder for you than it's going to hit for any other listener. You know what I mean? Just because you know the ins and outs of open mics and how the business works, you know, and you know what overconfident like snot nosed comedians talk like and how they act at stage and even open mics, which is. I know this is the third time I'm saying this, but it's an egregious behavior.
So yeah.
Being an egregious Philbin. I don't know if it's going to be a love letter, though. People can take it as they will, and I'll just be like, I get what you mean by that. You know what I mean? Take it as you will. I'm cool with whatever. I just think it's very esoteric and niche of an album. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? It's somebody who has just done comedy for too long, you know, and is kind of over it. And now it's now I'm just going to talk about doing comedy itself, you know, at least for the first track, and then the last, all the bonus tracks, you know, and then the track 2 through 5 are hopefully somewhat digestible to a greater audience.
Yeah, there are, I guess you only name names a couple of times. I think mostly in the Running the Light tracks, you name a couple of comedians. I guess you did it on stage and it was local to what you were doing. It's almost like that Ricky Gervais talking to Seinfeld and Louis C.K. where they talk about cutting out the local stuff that you do at the beginning of your set, where you kept in the nichest of niche references, which is about Jerry going on too long in their set.
Yeah.
But I mean, that was the recording. So I assume that's why, you know, you didn't need to try and make this a universal experience for everybody. It's there's some stuff that can just be for us.
Yeah, I think so. And hopefully when people listen to that, if they I think when people listen to that and they know
they're going to know their own Jerry, they know who their Jerry is in their scene.
So yeah, that's for one. But also if somebody's not even a huge comedy fan and they're oh yeah, he's making fun of people who go over the light, then I'm this person doesn't go over the light, but Jerry does, you know, and you hear the crowd laugh and it's oh man. So I guess there is another comedian that goes over the light there and he wrote another song about it. So yeah, but I mean, you have to be very attentive to, and I don't expect people to listen to this all the way through or get all these references. But yeah, that's also a good point. Some scenes may have their own Jerry, you know, when I did those songs at the Greenerside show a few weeks ago in Greensboro, I asked Nick beforehand, who was the host, and I was like, hey, is there anybody here that goes over the light infamously at all these open mics that I could reference before I do the song? And he was like, yeah, JD. And I was like, I like JD. I want to do that. So I just didn't do it. I think I said Nick or Ethan. I forgot who I said. But
wow, Ethan's still catching strays even after the battle.
Shout out Ethan, man. He's my buddy. But yeah.
The only thing I want to say besides that about the opener is I will say in terms of beat selection, you do have an interest in kind of these more chill kind of beats. This one, I think, because it's so braggadocious, I think has my favorite beat selection of the project. Very fun beat, it kind of hits the vibe just right. So talk through about your beat selection process. So how was that? How was trying to figure out what you wanted to rap over for these songs?
Yeah, when I was looking for the one for the opener track, I was like, since this is a very braggadocious song, and I want it to almost sound as obnoxiously braggadocious as possible. So I'm like, the only thing I could think in my head as as far as a beat is a Dipset type beat, you know, because those old Harlem tracks, they're just going crazy over these beats to where it just sounds like an anthem, you know what I mean? And I was looking for a beat like that, and I found a few Dipset type beats, and then I found a beat that was produced by this guy named Syndrome, and I loved it so much. This is the perfect beat. I think it was J. Cole type beat or something like that. And but also to be very careful with this project, since I knew I wanted to record it on Spotify. And in the past, when Patrick and I have put stuff on Spotify. Some stuff got taken down because the samples were not clear. Mm-hmm. And we just, like, this was like from stuff that we got off YouTube that said was like, oh, free to use. And I was like, well, I'm not going to trust that anymore because that can mean a lot of different things, you know? So I was looking up this guy's stuff and I like this beat a lot. So I messaged him and I was like, hey, I want to put this on Spotify. What package would I get on your website if I were to do so, like for this song? And like, would it get taken down? Like, are the samples all cleared? And he like, for one, shout out to Syndrome, because he responded very fast, and he's responded to me very fast every time I reached out to him. Mm-hmm. But he was like, yeah, all my samples are clear and everything. If you get this package, you can put it on there, no problem at all. And even if you get this package that says like a limit to this, it was kind of funny. One of the packages was like limit to 10,000 streams. And I messaged him and I was like, what if it goes over 10,000 streams? And because like, I know, I don't think it's going to go over, but I would just hate if like just the sheer possibility of it getting some traction and it going over that it would just get taken down, you know? And like, oh, that sucks. So I messaged him about it and he was just like, you don't have to worry about that.
Yeah. I mean, I get the legality of that, but what is their interest in taking down a song that's getting more popular than they thought it would be?
I don't really know. But also he said like, if it does go over, you can always just upgrade your package we won't take it down. So I guess like the producer has a say in it before it just gets automatically taken down. Unlike the other stuff that me and Patrick put up that just got taken down like immediately after we posted it. But shout out Syndrome. So I just use all of it. Like most of the album is produced by him and this guy named Arcadum. And also I did that too to kind of save some money with like package deals with buying multiple beats at one time, but also just knowing that the samples are cleared and everything, because the last thing I want to do is work very hard on a project and spend all this money and then like immediately something get taken down or I get like fined for like not clearing a sample. So I was like, all right, I'll just do this.
But then you can do that cool thing when you do the show live where you can say, this is the beat I actually wanted to rap on for this one or whatever.
I might do that, to be honest. Like, and I've wrote other raps that are like, I showed you that other rap called like You Had to Be There, and I'm just not going to put that one out at all. And I think for that one, I was just going to rap over like maybe one of like your old beats, because that one beat that you have with like Paul sitting on a rock somewhere in Cuba or something like that.
Yeah.
I forgot what it's called. We used it for some Buster Cup song, but we never put it out.
It's that one that's got like a swing sample in it, and then like
it's called Swing. I was gonna do it over that or like one of your beats, because I wanted to use a lot of your beats for it, but I know
my
it was kind of like
clear, baby.
Yeah, the samples ain't clear, so I was like, I want this to stay out. But yeah, that's why at like a Buster Cup shows we'll do beats and we're like, we got this one off YouTube and you will never hear it on streaming services.
DJ YouTube. Yeah.
DJ YouTube. But yeah, shout out Syndrome and shout out Arcadum. Their beats are crazy.
Gotcha. So the selection process was initially looking for type beats that you knew you wanted, and then you got the packages from the producers you liked, or once you...
So,
how big is Syndrome's library? How much fishing did you still have to do once you...
Huge. Okay. It's huge. And his website is very like it's very curated, you know? So you can go on there, you look for BPMs, you go like a certain number of BPMs, you go look for like certain type beats, you know?
Now see, I would call that more organized than curated.
A little callback. But no, it really just started with that opening track, because I was looking for Dipset type beats, and then I found that type beat and I liked it a lot, and then I saw that if you buy like two you get one free, and I'm like, well, fuck it, I have all these other songs written, let me look through all these beats. And he had so many fire beats, and I was like, yep, I'm getting this opening track, and then I'm gonna buy two more. I ended up buying three more, I like them a lot. But yeah, it really just started with that opening track and then just seeing the deals. And then before I just got it, though, I was like looking through his other beats and I'm like, all of these are really, really good and very, like, very organized. You know, it was like something type beat. And I'm like, that's what I need to look for, you know, like for the song that's like a bop, you know, the fourth track, I was looking for like 3-6 Mafia or like Suicide Boys type beat, because like I just wanted to be like a funny, like fun little bop that's like a lot of bass in it. And that was like one of the first ones I saw that said like Suicide Boys type beat on his site, and I was like, this is perfect. Like, yeah, like he's a good producer.
Nice. So I think maybe another shout out we can talk about for the second track. I should have opened with this. I didn't have any lyrics to pick out. It is very much more stand-up writing than it is bar heavy. But talk me through the process of getting that recorded and mixed and mastered in a way that it sounds as good as it does in the final cut.
That's a great question. That was a hellacious one to do myself. So I had to recruit Shout out Uzi at Orpheus Studios in Lexington, who mixed and mastered the whole project. That was the hardest one, I think, that he had to go through. But he did it so effortlessly. You know what I mean? It took him long, but like he wasn't like stressed at all. He was like, yep, I know what to do with this. This is easy. But I guess just to walk the audience through the track, it's a stand-up set that I do where I go on stage and I say that before I did stand-up comedy, I was a rapper. And today, while looking through some old files on my laptop, I found the first rap song that I ever recorded. So I went ahead and actually sent the file to the DJ here in like the sound booth, or like maybe I'll say like the host or whatever like that. And I want to play that as like my walk up music, because you know, stand up comedians, they always have walk up music. I thought that'd be kind of cool. So yeah, if you can just like reintroduce me real quick, and I gesture to the host like to come back on stage, and then I walk off stage. They say, I usually tell them, like, say the same exact thing you said when you introduced me on stage the first time, because usually that'll get a laugh, like with the same mannerisms and everything. So then I walk on stage and the beat starts playing. And then, like, right before I try to say something into the microphone, thinking that the beat's going to stop, the vocals come in on the beat, where I start saying, like, very problematic things, as if, like, and then I kind of play the characters, like, I did not know they were going to play this whole song. And the things are just, like, I don't respect women and children. Like, if there's a fire, I'm going to get out first. I once moved a bird nest illegally. Yeah. And I'm proud of it.
Yeah, this all rhymes in the song.
Yeah, this all rhymes. Yeah. Some of it is just
some of it's
blatantly
a little shaky. Yeah.
Yeah, some of it's pretty shaky. So while that song's playing, I'm just pretty much begging the DJ or the host to cut off the music. And then when the vocals, like every now and then the vocals will stop, but the beat keeps on going. And I'll be like, all right, so that's the end of the song. And I'll try to get into stand up and I'll maybe say something like, you know, I'm a liberal or this and this. And then the vocals come back in and be like, I was at January 6th. And it was just, so everything that I'm trying to say on stage is getting like negated by the vocals on this track. And I'm begging them to stop playing it so that I could just try to come off as a good person and win this crowd over. So the mixing was very hard because the mixing was like, we have to make sure, because I've recorded this and put it like on Instagram, on YouTube and stuff. And it's even like on video, if I'm just videoing this filming this at a show, it's hard for the audio to pick up what exactly the song is saying and what I'm saying. But if you're there live, it's very easy to catch. So the mixing process was like, let's like, you know, amp my vocals up every time I talk on stage, but then lower it all the way down when the music is playing and amp those vocals up. So the person listening to it can hear both me rapping and then me trying to interject.
Was I at the debut for that one? Did you do that one for the first time at Blue Tile?
No, the first time I did that was at Art Bar.
Okay.
And to this day, that may be the best that it's ever worked. But then again, Art Bar, that's where I did the Time Limit songs that are on this album.
Right.
Because like, this is a very like, it's a very niche bit. You know what I mean? Like, you got to really be toned in, like focused in, like zeroed in on this to understand what I'm trying to do. And that night, it was just the perfect crowd. It was mostly comedians. So I wish I had that on film, but I just didn't film it because I didn't think it was going to work that well. But the one that's on the album, I did it at Greensboro for their like 2023 festival, I think.
I mean, it's a little bit of a magic trick of timing, right? Because you have like a bit where you're doing crowd work that the song then needs to come into, where you're also not only relying on your own sense of timing, but getting someone in the audience to speak fast enough in a way that works with the track timing. Were you worried about that when you did it, or does that usually go smoothly, that you just ask somebody what their job is and then?
No, because, and just to lay it out, it's like I ask somebody what their job is, and then after they see what their job is, I'm like, that's a cool, that's a respectable profession. And then that's when the beat, or that's when the vocals come back in and be like, I don't give a fuck about what anybody does for a living, which is like a crazy thing just to say out of context. I don't know why that would be my first rap song. But what I always try to do is like, I try to ask them as soon as possible because they could take a while to answer the question. I don't even need to say anything after they tell me the job. As like, my vocals are going to come in. But like, if I go and ask them right now and they say something really fast, I can kind of drag it on a little bit. Be like, oh, that's a really cool profession. Like teacher, my mom was a teacher, this and this. I can go on as long as possible. But I just need to ask them as soon as like the previous verse ends, you know? Just so they'll answer it. And usually, I've never had a problem with somebody not answering that.
Yeah, so I think that one of the other things that I like that track shows is the Lonely Island influence that we were talking about, where Especially for like a live performance, you have to build, right? You have to build on the established premise that you're doing. And so you have to change the bit a little bit, but you also have recurring jokes in it too. So you're playing with both of these things of like playing with the familiar, but also like, how do I get this next part to kind of bump up a little bit from what I'm doing? So you do the crowd work, then you do the thing about January 6th. How much of like your writing process has that like structure of like amping it up each step or whatever? As opposed to a song where the song can just have an idea and you can just make the jokes the entire way through.
That's a good question. These are very good questions.
Yeah, I know.
You're like the Hot Ones guy. This is kind of like a Hot Ones interview.
Hey, I'm looking at Sean Evans right now.
You know, I feel like amping it up is very important when you don't have much to work with. If you have a lot, like, so for example, the Swivel Chair song with the Buster Cubs.
Right.
That's a lot to work with a swivel chair. You know, like Patrick has the jokes about like not being charged for drunk driving because he's on a swivel chair. We have jokes about like being in the office and doing it and getting in trouble, but still doing it to go on the street, you know, except for a car. There's a lot of stuff to do with that. With me being problematic, that doesn't give me necessarily like too much. Like I can go a lot of different directions.
Yeah,
with
but it's
it.
Not always going to be fun.
Yeah, it's always, yeah. I could say some things that are just not funny to say, and it's like I want to say stuff that that like it has to be very specific. It has to try to cancel me as a comedian, and then I have to try to negate it, and then it has to negate me right back. So like the thing about amping it up, like I say the stuff about like moving a bird's nest, and then I try to be like I'm an animal rights activist, blah blah blah. And then it goes into me moving just different other types of animals' nest, like beaver nest and like a squirrel's nest, I think I say the last time.
Yeah, that's the last one.
And then like, but I do kind of want to go with like different stuff except for amping it up, you know? So that's, I was like, if I'm going to do different stuff, I wanted to hit just as hard as me amping it up. So what's just like a good one liner I could say. And that's at the very end when I'm like, you know, I'm a progressive person. I'm a liberal. And then the only line, which doesn't rhyme with anything, is just me like trying to rap like I was at January 6th. And I'm like, OK, cut it off. Because if I were to just rap the whole time different problematic things, I think the song would have got pretty old pretty fast. And it would have just sounded way like worse, like morally, you know what I mean? Like it just made me seem like
the moving the bird's nest is a really good towing of the line of something that like if someone took it seriously because they didn't get the bit, they still wouldn't be too angry to listen to the rest of the song. Right. I don't think.
And that was a real thing that I accidentally did once. I think I told you that, but yeah, I found a bird nest in my riding lawnmower and I didn't know what to do with it, and I was living with my girlfriend at the time. So, and I moved it to like near our shed. It was that house we were living on Michaelmas, and I moved it to the shed. And I was like, I came inside and I was like, yeah, there was a bird nest in the riding lawnmower. I didn't ride the lawnmower though. I did move the bird nest, thinking like I'm a good person, you know. And then Manny was like, you are not supposed to do that. And then I was like, oh man, should I call somebody? She was like, no, that's illegal. Just don't tell anybody you did that.
That's illegal. Like, is that actually illegal? Did you check that?
It is illegal.
It was an endangered
I don't know if you
bird?
Can go to jail for it, but it is illegal, yeah.
What type of bird was it?
I think it was a bald eagle.
Yeah, okay. A big-ass lawnmower, goddamn.
It was a riding one, so
All right.
But yeah.
So let's move into You Know What I Mean, third track. Let's get through some of these lyrics. Okay, so the Lululemon and your plans are coming into fruition. That was a line where, so lemon and fruit is supposed to be the connection, even though fruition isn't really said as fruitition.
Yeah.
Okay, I didn't really catch that one until I was reading it. And I was like, if he thought of that and that was intentional, that's pretty clever.
Yeah. And I was trying to do something cool with like, that's too fitting.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know, like fitting like on a shirt and stuff like that.
Right. You're talking about your shirts, your white shirts coming from Lululemon.
Yeah.
Is that because you agree with the store owner about why he named his store that way?
Let's hear why he named the store that way, Adrian. I feel like you know and I don't.
He thought it'd be funny to hear the people in the Japanese market say the name.
Oh, is that why?
Yeah, that's your shirts. That's your man's.
Oh, man. Well, I doubled down on that lyric. That is a funny pal. No, that is so fucked up. Damn.
Do you actually get your shirts from Lululemon?
No, I can't afford that shit.
Oh, I didn't know. I know there's one by the Target in the World Market. I don't know if you're actually
going
there.
I mean, I could probably afford a t-shirt from there, but nah, I just get Hanes, baby.
Oh, okay, all right.
Get Hanes, yeah.
Damn, you gotta at least get like a Banana Republic or something. Those are some nice shirts.
I know, right? Yeah.
By the way, easy gift for Phil. If you want to get Phil a gift, just send him a pack of white shirts.
Oh, 100%, yeah. I have a lot of different brands people give me, and I kind of have like a bracket in my head of which the best one is right now. But
I'll get you some Uniqlo ones for your birthday.
Yeah, I'll do some Uniqlo. I haven't tried those.
You still a medium? What are you rocking? Double XL?
medium. Medium, but I'm a double XL freshman.
I just want to say, ayo, pause really quick for the line, I fill brethren. Insane thing to say that you're filling up brethren.
Oh, that's funny. that's fill brethren. I just want to pause you real quick.
There is also kind of like a meta note here about how sometimes where I remember talking to Paul once about noticing multis in hip hop that feel a little bit forced, where he was showing me a Heem song and he was talking about how he had to take the damn bus. And I was like, he wasn't that mad about taking the bus. That just made it rhyme as a multi.
Yeah, what is he, a senior citizen? I got the damn bus.
The damn bus. But there are certain things where, because I know you, I'll hear you say something or use a word or use a phrase in a song, and I'll be like, Phil would never say that in real life. There's no way yes. he's saying that.
I'm not going to lie. A lot of these lyrics are cap. I'll go ahead and put it out there. These are a lot of cap.
Actually, that's great. Can we do a new segment sponsored by PBR called Keeping It 100?
Yeah, let's do it.
All right. So in this song, you said you hit the perp first every morning like your connection score. What's your current purple first stat, and are you proud of it?
When you say perp first, do you mean the weed or do you mean the connection score?
I think
score?
It was a double entendre, but I think you know which entendre I'm talking about.
All right, let's see. The perp first.
If you're doing that every morning, I want to see what your stats are like.
Let's see. I have a 60% win rate.
Okay. I asked for, but...
I have a zero current streak. Oh,
show me your percentages.
Okay. I only have 57 perp first right now.
Okay. 57. Let me see what I get. I got
out of 516.
You know what? Hey, we're going to count that. I've got 56.
Oh, let's go. Let's go, baby.
So we will count
that. I do purposely try to get the purple first, though. Purposely.
I do not. I don't got the time for that. Purposely.
Purposely.
You ever thought about doing a whole connection scheme? You think you'd do that in your next rap battle?
I don't think enough people. Here's the thing. Like, that was a New York Times.
You know, there's a big
mini-
Venn diagram between people who do New York Times minigames and people who do battle rap?
I think, like, so that was the start of a New York Times mini scheme that I did. And I don't think anybody's going to catch that, really, like, unless they are huge fans of the. Like, me, you, and Drake and Cole, you're all my only friends that are huge fans of these games. So, like, yeah.
You don't think they're going to catch that in the room when you do it live?
Oh, nah. Unless I have a projector.
Let's zoom out for a second. When are you planning on doing this live for people who want to come check it out?
I don't know. I'm going to drop it, and then I'm going to, depending on the feedback I get from it and see how well it does, I'll probably just, you know what, the most reliable place I could do it at, to where, like, they would say yes 100% is the Idiot Box Comedy Club, as long as they don't have something booked.
You don't think you could do like a tour where the tour is just all three different rooms of New Brooklyn Tavern?
That's pretty good. Yeah, I don't get paid in any of them.
It's called the Philanthropy Tour.
Yeah, I would probably hit up the Idiot Box if I wanted to do it. But also, like, I just like the Idiot Box, like, their crowds, and I like their people a lot. And I've done a good bit of stuff there already from the album. But yeah, I would just hit up them. And then, like, I don't know, if Wits End wants to do something, I would do it. But I don't think I would ask them, just because they always have big comedians coming through, and I don't think I get my foot in the door there like I used to. But yeah, I'd probably just do it there. But yeah, I'm not too stressed about an album release for some reason, because I think this album is already so, like, esoteric and niche, to where it's like one of those things where I put out and I'm like, all right, this was like something I did, you know, it's a fun listen, you know, especially if you're a comedian. And then I'll probably just work on a real album, like, next, or like a special next. And if I did a real album, it would be like, I want to do a release party for this, you know.
Gotcha. So the last thing I wanted to know is, I noticed either a typo or a potential other scheme that you were working on that maybe didn't get fully fleshed out. Him, he's him, my whole crew's hemmed up, you ain't as dope as you seem, and you spelled it S-E-A-M. Was this a sewing scheme that you were working on? Is it hemmed up supposed to be hemmed up?
Yeah, like hemmed up, yeah.
Okay, so I did catch that correctly. That's okay. That's pretty crazy. That's some crazy shit.
That I spelled it like S-C-A-M.
Yeah,
it?
Yeah.
Yeah, because sometimes with, like, I think when I'm, like, writing these lyrics on my laptop, I'm, like, I'm writing them envisioning that, like, I'll upload these to Rap Genius just for myself.
Well, then you got to do the parentheses you got to do for the alternate word. That's how you...
Yeah, I do, yeah. So, like, there's probably some bars in there that, I'm sure you call it everything, but there's probably some bars in there to where, like, if I uploaded those lyrics to a website and somebody looked through them, they still wouldn't catch stuff, because they're not really, like, spelled the right way. You know what I mean? I'm using, like, homophones, I think I'm using the right word, to have, like, bars in it. So but yeah, hemmed up, you mean dope as you seem,
Yeah. Okay, nice. So is there anything you wanted to say about You Know What I Mean in general? It's just a bar heavy track, or what are you talking about?
I think it's personally my favorite track from the album. I think like almost I think I can confidently say that every single line is a bar, or it's a setup for a bar. I don't think there's like really too much filler in there. I think like there's one spot that kind of seems like filler, but like when I talk about like working out and I think I say like, okay, I hit the purple first, like my connection score, smoking strands from Ecuador. I don't play many games, but give me the word, I'll like wordle, wordle, set the score. I need to start, here's where the filler starts. I'm like, I need to start stretching more, lifting weights, do some squats till my legs are sore.
Because you got no ass, like a metaphor.
No ass, like a metaphor. Like you can't use like or as in a metaphor.
And then you talk about small cake like a pedophore, which I know you don't know that you had to research that. I know you had to research what a pedophore
was. I know what a pedophore is.
Oh, okay. All right.
yeah, that's a little cake like a pedophore. Like I have a little butt.
Yeah.
But also, I try to, I don't know, I think this is a little bit of a stretch, but then right after that, I talk about, like, how bad my credit score is, and I'm like, well, cake can also be used for money, so maybe it's kind of like a double, like, I have, like, I got a little cake, like, a pedophore, it could be, like, butt or money, but yeah, that was the most fun track writing, because I was like, I have so many just, like, bars, like, in one specific Google Doc on my drive, and, I mean, some of these are pretty bad bars, I'm not going to lie. But I was like, whether these are good or bad bars, I just want to do a track full of them. And I feel like, I don't know, with like, you know, me saying like, you know what I mean? At the end and stuff like that, it's kind of like, do you get what I'm saying? Do you get these bars or are these bad bars? You know what I mean? So yeah, that was my favorite track on the album. I think like people who really, really just like that lyrical miracle rap or like that bar heavy rap, I think that would be their favorite one on the album. And it's definitely mine.
Yeah, I think opener might be mine, to be honest. I think so. I had a lot of fun listening to that one. Yeah. So let's get into That's an Old One. I'll let you introduce it first before I get into my specific questions. But what's the idea with this one?
So to kind of recap the other like titles of the other tracks, you know, I try to make it look like an actual set list, you know, and you'll see that on the back of the album. But like obviously with the first track being an opener, like this is my opening joke or whatever like that. And then the other one being like, I should have opened with this. I've heard comics say something among those lines when they have a really good joke midway through and like after their opener like completely bombed, they're like, damn, I should have done that one to open up my set. You know what I mean? Because it's like, I think that's funny to plan out a set list where your second thing is like, oh, this one should have been the opener.
Yeah,
you know
what
I mean? And then the third one, I was like, that would be just funny if I had a joke on my set list that was titled, You Know What I Mean. And it's like, I know what joke that is, you know? The fourth one, it's called That's an Old One, and I really just wanted to flip the phrase that people say on stage when a joke doesn't work, and they'll be like, that was a new one, and then people kind of laugh. I've heard people do that so much, and I just always thought it'd be so funny if a joke didn't work at all, and they were like, that was an old one. That was an old polished one. I'm surprised that didn't work, you know? And I'm like, eh, that'd be funny if I did That Was an Old One for the name of it, and then I just incorporated a lot of old jokes that I had in stand-up that didn't work on stage, and I would retire those. I want to do them again. So, like, one lyric in the song is talking about a Trader Joe's reusable grocery bag and me bringing it into Publix, and I'm like, yeah, that joke, it kind of works sometimes, but it's like, it's not really worth keeping. Let me just try to, like, you know, fit it into a rap song. So there's some jokes sprinkled into there that never worked on stage. I just put on there.
All right, cool. Let's get into the lyrics. So you've got a couple things here. You can check and see how I'm sick online like WebMD. And later on, I got Def Jams and the flow is unheard of. Do you get 5 cents in South Carolina for every bar you recycle? Or is that just a California program?
I did technically recycle those bars. But they were for a song that we had that never came out. And I was like,
okay.
I still like this bar. But yeah, you're right. I did recycle those bars. I have spit those now on two different instrumentals. I am impressed that you know that.
I've got an encyclopedic knowledge of your bars.
I've said this before on pod. I don't like how you know all of my rap, all my rap lyrics.
I'm your biggest fan. I don't know why you hate that I love you.
I love it. I know. I love it.
Let's see. So you come off on the album as a real family man, often mentioning spending time with your niece. On average, how many times a week are you hanging out with little Ruthie?
Ooh. I also like that you know my niece's name.
Oh, yeah. I have to know. I'm Adrian from Big Facts No Cap.
No, I really don't hang out with her that much. Whenever I hang out with my brothers, though, or my family in general, and everybody's there, I'll I'll gravitate just towards my niece, just because, like, all right, well, you're not going to say anything problematic.
You don't have conservative opinions yet.
Yeah, that's exactly what I'm thinking. Like, you're not going to piss me off, like, politically, so I'm just going to hang out with you the whole time. But also, I don't know, she's a funny, cute little baby. It's fun hanging out with babies when it's not your responsibility to watch after them. You know, when she's like, I have to go to the bathroom, I'm like, let me go get your mother. I'm all not... Right. Yeah, but I can't wait till she gets a little bit older and I could bring her to, like, the zoo and we could, like, spend some real, like, uncle and, like, niece time, you know what I mean? I think it's so cool to have a niece and I guess a nephew, but, yeah. Like, a niece and nephew, I don't know. The nephew's still, like, a baby, so I can't even talk to it. You know, babies they don't even show expressions until 6 to 8 weeks. I learned that from Steve Hofstetter last night. So they may smile, but that's just the shape of their face for right now.
What you smiling about? Ain't shit sweet.
Ain't shit sweet. But yeah, I can't wait till my niece gets older and I could, like, actually, like, be more in her life as an uncle and, like,
she's gonna love Riverbanks, man. That zoo is just a playground now. They completely gave up on it being an animal thing.
Yeah, for real.
It's all just sponsored attractions now.
They let those kids in the exhibits, man. They don't give a shit.
Might as well. There's barely any animals in there.
Yeah.
I think this is the track where you talk a little bit about trying to educate a woman on global warming.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
I noticed a lack of politics in your material, aside from some mentions of global warming. Is that because you agree with what's going on right now in this country, or because you're comfortable and know there's lots of time to relax before the fascists come through your door?
The latter.
Oh, okay. All right, cool. Asked and answered.
It was a lot of time to relax. No, I've never cut a girl off for not believing global warming. I don't know why I think about it. That's a wild point of view to have, to be honest. I wouldn't know what to say to that, but I really just did that for the bar to be like...
Gotcha. So that one wasn't inspired by real events.
Yeah, I was not inspired by real events.
All right. So one of my favorite multis on the album is Ellie Goulding and Kelly Rowland. Obviously, you say them in a way that makes them rhyme. Can we do a new segment sponsored by Malort where I give you a celeb and you have to come up with your best multi that includes another celeb off the dome?
Oh, 100%.
All right. So I'm going to give you the name of celeb. I want you to try and freestyle the name of another celeb that rhymes. If it's a multi, even better. All right?
Okay. Yeah, I'll try.
All right. First one. Diddy.
Oh, Diddy? Okay, I'll do a bar about this. Yo, I just watched the Diddy doc. That was the one that 50 dropped.
Oh, okay. All right.
50 Cent? Okay.
Yeah, yeah. All right. Second one. Kevin Spacey.
Oh, that's a really good multi. Kevin Spacey. Fuck,
if you need a pass, you can get a pass, but Kevin Spacey.
How many passes do I get and how many names are there?
Yeah, there's like four more.
Four more? Can I come back to that one?
Okay.
I don't want to pass it though yet.
Gotcha. Woody Allen.
Woody Allen. I miss the ones that were two syllables like Diddy.
Okay, how about Harvey Weinstein? You can do first name or last name.
I kind of see a theme here. Harvey, let me just look through my notes. I think I was rapping about him earlier. Harvey Weinstein. Is somebody named Barney? Barney.
What about Bill Cosby?
Bill Cosby. Wasn't he the comedian? Oh, funny guy. Much like all the other people. Bill Cosby. There's probably somebody named Phil and then the last name that rhymes with Crosby. Cosby.
Is there a Phil Crosby in the crowd?
Phil Crosby. Yeah, wait, can I just do names of people that I know? Yeah. Let's do that. Let's start over. So who was the first one? Kevin Spacey? Oh, do you know Devin Tracy?
Devin Tracy? Yeah, I know him.
Shout out Devin Tracy. What was the other one? Woody Allen. You know Whoopi Goldberg's original government name, right?
No. Yeah, enlighten me.
It was Whoopi Callen. She was related to Brian Callen, the comedian, Whoopi Callen.
Oh, okay. And my last one was Smitty.
Smitty. You know that Smitty doc? That Fitty drop?
Fitty drop? You started off good. Really hot on that one. I like that.
Yeah. I feel like Diddy, that was a pretty easy one because you could just expand on that. But like,
it is good. Mononyms are good. I should have stuck with like Cher and like Kesha. Oh, instead, yeah, I chose different names. I don't know why those came to me.
Yeah, they all just seem to have a little theme to it. But I don't know. Yeah, it is kind of hard to find like a celebrity name that rhymes perfectly with like another one.
How is this said? It would be Ellie Goulding and Kelly Rowland. You kind of have to soften the ends a little bit.
You have to soften the G at the end of Ellie Goulding for sure. Ellie Goulding and then Kelly Rowland. Mm-hmm. But yeah, with Harvey Weinstein, that's such a... Because that's like three stressed syllables of a problematic person.
All right.
That was a good segment.
It was a good segment. All right. Let's see. Hold on. You mentioned in this song...
Wait. That segment, crazy. What was that second name? Kevin Spacey?
All right, bars. Kids got bars. Do you have any ideas for if you make the same pivot as Echo and you're going to start wrestling? Do you have a walk-on music idea for that, a la the second track?
Ooh, Like, if I started wrestling, what would my walk-up track be?
Yeah.
One of my tracks?
Or do you have a bit that you would do for that?
Oh, that's good. Yeah, it would be like a really cool rock and roll track, and it would be like, I'm scared. I know I look very confident, but I'm scared.
It'd be a rap song with voicemails, but the voicemails from your doctor telling you you have hollow bone syndrome.
Yeah. It was like, hey, return my calls. Whatever, do not do that wrestling match on Sundays. Do not do that tables, ladders, and chairs match that you signed up for.
A song about how you're afraid to tell people you're scared of heights.
Yeah, and then I still go on the ladder. And I'm like, come on. And then I'm like shaking the ladder.
Okay, so let's see. You mentioned in this song that your toes are webbed. What other parts of your body are disgusting and shouldn't be mentioned around polite company?
Do you think polite company is listening to my album?
Oh, that's a good rebuttal. Your rebuttal game's crazy.
That is one of the most disgusting parts of my body. I don't like my birthmark either. I think those two things. I think my ears are too big. Same thing with my penis. A little too big.
A lot of body dysmorphia that we're going through right
my
now.
My balls are webbed together as well. But no, the good question. Thank you. Yeah. I do have some other disgusting parts of my body.
Okay, let's see. No. Of course I'm joking. Let's see. What other questions do I have? None for that track. Let's see. Well, let's go back to your musical influences. So your lyrical style has a lot of obvious influence from some of the best to ever hold a mic. Eminem, Macklemore, Riff Raff. Who would you list as your biggest inspos? And what were you listening to while crafting the lyrics to this album?
Just to top off that list.
Top off all those rappers.
I guess all the other albino and white people there are out there. My favorite rappers of all time, when it comes to just like rhyming and then like being very bar heavy, I think King Los, he's really up there. I think Nick Grant, even though I didn't start listening until like a few years ago, but I love all of his music so much, and he's very bar heavy. But yeah, Nick Grant, King Los, I do like Eminem a lot. I guess as far as flow goes, I like J. Cole a lot. I like Vince Staples a lot. I have a very big, like, broad spectrum of like my favorite rap. Like, and I think I even told you this. Like, I could listen to a rapper, like, I could listen to like the opposite ends of the spectrum of rappers. Like, even like it's kind of like what LP said when he was like, yeah, I like Lil Pump's music a lot. And I was like, he was like, yeah, it is what it is. You know what I mean? Like, if you're looking for that kind of music, he's really good at that kind of music. So it's like, yeah, all the subgenres of rap, like, I really, really fuck with. But as far as flow goes, A Boogie with the Hoodie, like, has hands down the best, like, original flows, I think, right now in the rap game. It's crazy. I know a lot of people don't like his lyrics or, like, the, like, what his songs are like, you know, or how they sound. But I kind of like the whole thing that A Boogie is doing. But also, his flows are just crazy. And I think it kind of, like, pushes the limits, you know, and I think that's why a lot of people like Drake, because, you know, he's like one of the first to like really effortlessly mix rap and R&B and make it sound like commercially good to most listeners, you know. So I like everybody, man, but like as far as like lyrical content goes, I would say King Los and Nick Grant are like really up there, and as far as flow, I would say like J. Cole and A Boogie are like my favorites.
And do you think that influence is in the album? Do you think people can hear that, or what do you, or do you think that's more of just what you like? Do you think you keep those two things kind of separate?
I wouldn't be mad if somebody was like, hey, like, you know, you sound a lot like this rapper. You know what I mean? Like, I'm all ears for that discussion. Yeah, I don't know. Like, it's one of those things too, where it's like, I'm never mad about it. Even when somebody says like, oh, you sound like this certain comedian, I'm never really mad about it. It's like, okay, well, that, if anything, that makes me want to sound different for them, and I appreciate you telling me. But I don't know, like, do you think I sound like anybody else specifically on this album? Or do you think it's just kind of like the tracks are too different to like kind of pinpoint it?
I don't think there's a singular influence. I think I did mention to you that I thought the opener sounded more like Mac Miller to me, like an old Mac Miller.
Oh, really? Okay. That's cool. Yeah. Rest in peace. I like that.
R.I.P. All right. So I'll leave y'all with this last track on the album. What do you want to say about this one off rip?
Off rip, I would say I with the other songs, I try to go for a different theme each song. You know, I only had 5 songs, you know, the first one being like just like satirical comedy song. Second one being, I don't even know how to describe that one. That's just a live stand-up act of like a song, but I guess just showing how I can mix stand-up and rap, I guess. Third song is just for people who like bars a lot. The fourth one I consider more of just like, it's like a little bop, little fun little song, you know? when the other ones aren't necessarily fun, and they were just like, oh, I just want to listen to this, you know, maybe have a good flow, whatever, whatever. But this one's more of just like a bop to play in your little car, you know. And I was like, I think the only thing that I'm really missing is something somewhat serious, you know, and somewhat vulnerable. So I was like, I don't want to do it. But at the same time, in my head, it makes the most sense to do, you know, because like, I don't know what other type of song I could have done. Like, I've already did a comedy song. I've already done something that was like live, you know, I already done something that was lyrical. I already did something that was a fun song. I'm like, I gotta do something somewhat serious or vulnerable, even though I don't want to do it. But it's like, it makes the most sense, I feel like. But I could be wrong. There's probably something else I missed, you know, like a different theme song I could have done. But I don't know. I feel like also...
You didn't do a song where you introduced a new dance. You did that on your previous record.
That is true. I didn't do a dance song.
You need to do one for the ladies.
Oh, no, this whole thing's for the ladies.
Oh, okay. Interesting.
I didn't do one for the dudes, though.
I will say, speaking about getting vulnerable, that doesn't really happen until the second verse. And I think I might have asked you this in person, but who is the person that you're writing about in the second verse, if you feel like saying, as far as I know, the only woman you've been seeing regularly is the person working the Taco Bell drive-thru window?
She messed up my order once. I'm like, damn, you play with me for real. Nah, I don't want to say anybody's name. I feel weird saying that. But I will say that was a very long time ago, and it wasn't something that actually like really affect. I feel like if you're cheated on like at like a, not even an early age, but like early into like your like when you really start dating people, you know, I feel like that's the best time to get cheated on, you know, like looking back, like there's no good time to be cheated on ever.
I like this.
But yeah, I don't know. Like it sucks being like, I couldn't imagine being cheated on nowadays, you know, that would suck. But yeah, that was something that wasn't even that like serious at the time. Like, it didn't affect me that much because I was just like, all right, I guess this is just how it goes. You know what I mean? And then I really started dating people and getting into like real relationships. And then it was like, all right, yeah, there's other people out there that are like, I don't think people who cheat too are necessarily bad people or anything. But that stuff that I wrote, like a lot of these lyrics that I wrote are from stuff I wrote like years ago and that were just like in my Google Docs. And I was like, if I did something vulnerable, I'll put this stuff in there. But it's not something like that like really affects me to this day or anything. I will say, yeah, getting cheated on at a very like early age or early into dating, that's the time to do it. You know what I mean? That's the time to do
it. You gotta do it.
If you gotta get cheated on, I guess that's the time. But yeah.
Yeah, I mean, the thing for me is anytime I hear about someone cheating, it's like, big dog's gotta bark.
That's also a great way to look at it. Honestly, that is a pretty player response. When somebody say, hey, I cheated on you, I was like, hey, I get it.
Big dog's gotta bark. What are you gonna do?
Get him like all a new collar and stuff, yeah.
So in this song, you kind of mention your multi-hyphenate status. You kind of put a spotlight on that. Stand up, battle rapping, acting, and now dropping music. It seems like you wear a lot of different hats. Is that because of your receding hairline?
That's pretty funny. That's funny stuff, guy. You think you're real funny, huh?
Could you imagine if that
you know what? I'm going to rewrite the second verse about you.
Sean Evans getting poked in the chest. Be like, oh, you're a real funny guy, huh?
Hey, you're funny. He's poking him with a hot wing, getting on his shirt. I got a last fucking dab for you.
All right. I got another question that's not a joke. So one of the lyrics in the song is, I'm reminiscing on my old music. My flow's stupid. It's missing rhythm. When you look back at your music and you make these kind of lucid criticisms, is there a reason why you don't fix that on the new record?
Yeah, because I'm reminiscing. So that verse was it was all like a motif, right? I think that's the right word for it. Yeah, so it was like I was tipping
circling
my hat.
Circling back to using a word and not knowing
it was a really, really bad rhythm.
I think
bad
you meant an homage.
An homage. I was tipping one of my mini hats that I wear to my old music. It was a callback, actually. That's what it was. It was a callback. I just keep on changing my mind. It was a callback where they're using comedy. You know, I was calling back my bad music by doing more bad music.
No, so like how do you view your old music, and what do you think you're going to think of this album in like 5 years? Like, do you think you're going to keep getting better and it's going to be like you're always going to find your old work cringy, or do you think like, or do you even think your old work's cringy, or do you just think it's like not your best material?
I think some of my old work is pretty cringy, but like, yeah, I think that's really what it was. I think it was just like inexperience, you know what I mean? And just trying to do it, you know? But I mean, same thing like what we were talking about earlier. When I first did stand-up, I was shit. So it was like one of those things where like, well, this is how you do rap, you know what I mean? Like a lot of people just don't make mixtapes and then never put them out, you know what I mean? Yeah, otherwise, with like stand-up comedy, there's like open mics for that, you know? And so you get stuff that's polished, but with rap, it's kind of like you make tracks like, I don't know. I guess another side of look, like another way to look at it is like maybe some people that are really lyrical, maybe they'll see rap battles more as like an open mic type thing, right? Mm. To be like, oh, I'm gonna go like, you know, spit some bars at like a rap battle, and then kind of once I feel like I have a good like rap persona and like a stage presence, then I'll mess with music and then see how that sounds. But I don't know, like. I think that makes sense, though. Like, with comedy, there is open mics, and you can really find your stage presence on that before you do a show, you know? And it's like, with rap, I just felt like the first step wasn't open mics. It was just, like, put out a mixtape and then see how mm-hmm. it sounds. And then looking back at it, yeah, I do... There's a lot of stuff that I say or I just... How I sound with it and the flow is not there, and I'm like, damn, that did kind of suck. But it's not something that I, like... that bums me out or anything. It's like, oh, okay, I was trying my little hardest. Then but how I would look at this album 5 years from now, hopefully I just keep on getting better, so hopefully I look at this album as not that good. But I think regardless, I'll look at this album better than the Buster Cups album, or at least my performances on the Buster Cups album, mm-hmm. my performances on the Open Mics album. And I think that's how any artist should look at their stuff. Like, they just kept on getting better, you know.
Is there anything that you won't listen to, or do you still listen to everything you've made? Or are you willing to?
Nah, there's still a good bit of stuff I won't listen to. I think my favorite tracks from our mixtape was Publico, 90s Kid, and the other one when it's like, the remix to Ignition. I thought that was a really funny track name. I was like, I kind of like the flow on this one. This is fun.
That was pretty funny back then.
but yeah, there was like, yeah, the other songs we recorded that were on there, or the other songs we never put out, like... Yeah, I didn't like it. I don't know. It was like, I think just back then I don't think I've listened to enough rap music at the time, even though that's all I listened to growing up. But like, I just didn't listen to enough different rap. You know what I mean? Like, and when I say that's all I listened to growing up, like that's like, I really just listened to that and then like some alternative like rap music. But like, I felt like at that time, since I only really listened to rap music, that I was ready to do it. And then over time, once I really started to understand why that like, rappers like Future or rappers that are maybe not necessarily that lyrical and more just doing different subgenres of rap, why they're just as important when it comes to crafting like your flow and how you sound. Because if you can understand why rappers like Future or A Boogie or like I don't know, like even rappers like Drake, you know what I mean, to be like, oh, I don't, these are not necessarily my taste, but I can understand why people like them, and then you will even like, I even grew to like that music, you know what I mean? So like, it, I think once you hit that point which you understand why it's good and then you even start to like it, you get a whole grasp on like how rap works in general, you know. And I'm not saying I know how rap works in general, but like I got a way better understanding once I didn't just listen to like Tech N9ne and Eminem and Hobson. Know what I mean? Yeah.
So is that your biggest piece of advice for someone who's trying to work on their own stuff right now, is just a varied hip-hop diet? Or what else do you think?
Yeah, if somebody's working on like wanting to make rap music, I guess that's my best advice, is like listen to everything and then like really try to understand why like all of it is successful for a certain reason, right? There's an audience for all of these things. So yeah, that's my best advice, yeah.
So you talk about being a 3-time honorable mention for best local comedian in the Free Times. Do you think this album is going to propel you towards a placement for best local rapper? And to put it more bluntly, how are you going to get Rat off the list if you can't even get the rats out your kitchen?
You're right. Fat Rat Cesar is in my kitchen right now. I'm trying to get him out. No, shout out to the rats in my kitchen, though. I'm sure they're listening right now live. No, I don't think I'm going to even like get nominated for it. But I don't know. I'm not too stressed about that. I didn't even think about that, to be honest, how I would technically be eligible for that. But I guess the Buster Cubs were nominated a few times. I don't know. I just didn't really think about that. But if somebody does vote me for it, that'd be cool. But
you're accepting the nomination here formally.
I'll humbly accept the nomination.
Okay.
But yeah, I don't know. I think I like, if anything, I just hope I keep on getting honorable mention for a comedian, because I just think it's funny at this point. You know, it's not going to be as funny when I get like second place. I would hate to get runner up. If I don't get first place, if I don't get honorable mention, just don't tell me anything. Don't even put me on nominations. I think it's funny to get honorable mention.
Keep my name out your mouth.
Keep my name out your mouth.
Okay, fair enough. Let's see. Okay, so that's the full album. I have another joke question, but I don't think it's worth doing.
Oh, no, please do it. I love it.
No, it's the bit that
I do. Don't piss me off at all. Go ahead.
It's the bit that I do where I make up a quote. So those are always the least fair. I was just going to say, expand on this quote from a previous interview. I understand that as a white man, I'm a guest in hip hop. So why don't people treat me better? You're supposed to be extra nice to guests. No one has ever treated me worse than I've been treated as a hip hop artist. It's no fair.
Yeah, expand on that. Do expand on that? Yeah, yeah, for sure. I need some. I don't think I should take my shoes off. I think I should keep my shoes on. I expect the charcuterie board and a little house tour as well. Show me around the house.
Nice. A little Rick Glassman reference.
And
okay.
Let me repaint the walls of the bathroom as well.
All right. So that closes out the album. Is there anything that you wanted to say about the bonus tracks? Do you consider this an album that you're supposed to listen to T to B, top to bottom? Or do you think people are going
to
be
poking around?
I think
you're supposed to listen to the bonus tracks. Yes, those should be in order. The first five tracks, you don't have to. Because there's something for everybody on there. Like the first song, I think comedians will like that one the most, if they like any of it. Then second one, I think that would just go for more comedy fans, you know, like who like just pure stand up. Third one, people who like, you know, bar heavy hip hop. Fourth one, somebody who just wants like kind of a funny, like little bop, you know. And then fifth one, that might just be for me. You know what I mean? That one may just be for me, or maybe we're just more of like a completion to like the all the themes of the album. But
it is interesting. So you're kind of considering this as you using all the tools in your toolbox to make these different types of songs, which I think we've maybe had conflicting opinions about in the past. I remember specifically Vince Staples' first EP, where you liked the song Limos, and I was like, he ain't got to do shit like that. He could have just done the good shit that he was doing the rest of the album, and you're like, no, I like that song.
Yeah, that's a perfect example. Yeah, because like, yeah, if he made another song that was like the other ones, you know, that were just more of just like cool songs.
6500 Degrees. I would have taken another one of those. I didn't need that bullshit from Limos. Yeah.
But yeah, I don't know. Like one of my favorite songs from The Fall Off that just came out was Life Sentence. And I was like, this is a pretty vulnerable song. This is a really good song too. And it's like, I would have loved it was just all raps too. That would have been really cool. But like, it makes sense why people put songs like that on an album. And I was like, I think I kind of want to at least try at that, you know, because I feel like I never really tried to do that. And especially we can't do that with the Buster Clubs, you know. But yeah, the other type of song that I wanted to make possibly in replace of something that was a little too, like maybe too vulnerable, you know, or just vulnerable in general, was one of those. I do like Drake's timestamp songs a lot. Because they're just a free-flowing song where it's kind of like, you know what I mean, to where it's like there's no hook in it or anything. It's just one really long verse, but it's not necessarily bar-heavy. It's just like, hey, this is what's going on in my life. This is like a little life update. Like when people post on Instagram, like once every blue moon, like, hey, life update, here it is. I like that, but also I felt like, at least for me, maybe I thought too much about it. I was like, that seems a little more pretentious about just trying to make a somewhat catchy song and being a little bit vulnerable in it than just doing a whole long verse about a life update. I don't know, something about that I was like, I don't think that's me, you know. But I don't know, it's pretentious in general to make art, I feel like, sometimes. So I don't know, maybe I thought too much about it.
I like how you just instantly turn into like a Boston dad.
Yeah, it's pretty gay to make art.
Really, at the end of the day,
hey, I'm pretentious as hell. But yeah.
Nice. Was there anything that you wanted to say about the bonus track? So it's that's all from a live set, just split up into different. Do you think anyone is gonna recognize their laughter in any of these tracks?
Oh yeah, 100%. I know. For sure, Wayne will recognize his laugh because Wayne has a very distinctive laugh. Chris Bickle, no, well, I don't know about Chris Bickle's laugh, but definitely his girlfriend Laura's laugh is very noticeable in there. But also, it's like, yeah, if they listen to it, they will definitely catch it. But like, it's one of those things to where like, I've done these open mics in Columbia for so long to where like, I definitely caught it, listened back, and I was like, oh, that's Wayne's laugh, or like, oh, that's Laura's laugh, or that's Tim Wimble's laugh. You know what I mean? Like, it is kind of cool how like we kind of know each other's laughs so distinctively when it's just such a small little mannerism people have. But I don't know. Do you think you have a distinctive laugh?
Yeah, I think so. I remember, one time my friend Emily said that my sister and I had very similar laughs, and I was like, yeah, that makes sense. Troy has a very manly laugh.
It's funny.
But no, yeah, I think I think I have a bit of a cackle. If you really get me. Not everybody always gets me like that, though.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. It's one of the greatest pleasures in this world to have a friend who's funnier than you, I'll tell you what.
And also just to hear people laugh. It is really, I don't know, it's cool. And it's cool when people have a weird laugh too. I feel like that's something that nobody should be ashamed of. It's one of the coolest things ever if you have a weird laugh.
Yeah. Same thing for a snort. I don't mind a snort.
Yeah, a snort is when honestly, like if I ever like tell jokes on stage and I hear people snort, that's like one of the biggest compliments. Like, and I think if you're a comedian making fun of somebody for snorting, you're an asshole. Like you
Yeah.
Yeah, you're a beast. You should fucking die forever.
You should die forever. Okay. So my last question as we wrap this up, when are we getting Kabuki 2, aka Katuki? Because you didn't mention that as one of your favorite tracks off of the Open Mics EP, which is crazy.
Yeah, that's one I can't listen to. I don't want to listen to it.
Really? Okay. Interesting.
Man, I think it'll be really fun to do it if I go in there even less prepared than I did the first time. And we record it with Ray again. Okay, so just a little backtrack, I guess, for the audience. We recorded a song called Kabuki. And this song of the album, I was like, this one, I'm going to rap so fucking fast. And mind you, I don't have any other tracks where I rap fast. I don't think I'm good at fast rapping. There's one part in Swivel Chair that is kind of fast, and when I do it live, sometimes people are like, whoa, that was kind of cool, you know what I mean? But it's not that long. Kabuki, there's like a 2.5 minute section where I'm like, it's crazy. You can't understand a lick what I'm saying. I don't know if I could do, because I think it would be really funny if we did it, and I do come in less prepared, and I try to rap like double time faster than the first time.
Okay, yeah.
It's almost like the video of the guy, I don't know if you've seen this guy, who goes on the show, and he was like, I'm the world's fastest reader. And they're like, all right. And he pulls out a book, and he's like, it's one of the funniest videos ever. And I was like, what are you doing?
I mean, speaking of your early rap days, that's like, I remember showing people videos of you in the car doing the fast verse from Rap God, and I remember showing my friend Roy, and he was like, I don't think he got all those words. And I was like, he got close though, right?
He got pretty close. I don't think I ever got all the words, but that was like a year-long project. I wasted a year of my life trying to learn the fast verse from Rap
God. You think he also did the fast verse from Gang Related? I don't know if you ever stuck that one, but yeah.
Ooh, yeah.
Get down or lay down. Hit you with the bread,
you better lay down. Hold on, you want me to look it up right now and see if I can do it?
Yeah, that sounds like a good way to close.
Okay, Rap Genius. It's called Gang Related, right?
Gang Related, yeah. I'll do the beat.
No, let's do the Rap God one. Rap God would be funnier. You see that video of the kid on the playground when he's like, I'm beginning to feel like a rap god. He's like flexing and getting all strong. It's really funny. It's so good. Okay, let's see. Is it also in the third verse? I think it is. Like, he probably ends the song with it.
About the lyrics coming about you at supersonic speed.
Oh, here we go. Yeah. Lyrics coming at you, supersonic speed. It's hard not to laugh because the first lyrics are summa luma duma luma.
Which we do use as a shorthand for stupid shit.
Yeah. Summa luma duma luma, you assuming I'm a human. What I gotta do to get it through to you? I'm superhuman, innovative, and nah, I don't think I get stressed all these
running out of breath.
Yeah, but okay, hold on. Summa luma duma luma, you assuming I'm a human. What I gotta do to get it through to you? I'm superhuman. No, I'm going too slow. What I gotta do to get it through to you? What I gotta do to get it through to you? I'm superhuman. That's hard. Superhuman. What
you used to almost nail this and then smoke a pack of cigarettes, and now you can barely get through the first line.
I used to smoke cigarettes during this verse. Summa luma duma luma. Simulima duma lima, you assuming I'm a human. What I gotta do to get it through to you? I'm superhuman, innovative, animator, rebels, than anything you say.
All right, brother, do you have any socials to plug? Do you have anything else to plug? Do you have any last words?
All right, yeah, I'm on Instagram at _PhilCarter. I'm dropping one, maybe two songs before I drop this album, and neither of them would be on the album.
Oh yeah, we didn't even talk about those. Are we revealing the names, or what are we doing? Can we talk about HP?
Yeah, we talk HF? About HP.
HF.
Yeah, I have a song about the basketball arcade machine Hoop Fever. You may have seen these at your local arcade or bar. Yeah, I've always made the jokes when we play Hoop Fever that I hold my head and I'm like, guys, I think I'm really coming down with something. I got Hoop Fever. And it always kills. It's a great bit, but I made a song about having the condition Hoop Fever and what exactly that entails. But I didn't call it Hoop Fever for potential legality reasons. I didn't want to get litigated. So I called it Bucket Spot, like a place to go shoot buckets at, like a bar, but then also Bucket Spot because that's another phrase for like a Bucket Spot comedian at mics that are bucket mics. You know, they pull your name out of a hat. Maybe you've seen Kill Tony, Bucket Spot comedian.
So many entendres.
So many. This album is layered. It's not good. Listen, but if one thing about the album, it's layered, though. It's layered. It's a lot of bad layers.
This album ain't gonna get cold. They laid up.
It laid up, though. But yeah, I have a music video for that, too, that I filmed with some friends in Greensboro, North Carolina. And I think it's pretty funny. I finished editing it today. I got the album artwork back and everything. I'm just, yeah. So I might drop that, like, next week or something. Who knows? But @_PhilCarter. And if you want to follow Adrian and Mine's band we have with Patrick Fowler, it's @TheBusterCups on social media. And yeah, that's about it.
And for more interviews like this, follow La Gran Puchica on Instagram.
Oh yeah, you're on Instagram now.
Yeah. All right, and then we'll end on that.